Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, our theme is COVID-19 a natural accident, as we've been led to believe, came from a bat that possibly, maybe bit into a pig, infected the pig, and then that was eaten by people in a outdoor market and taken home, and then that's where the infection began? Or was it actually designed? And if so, for what purposes? This is what my guest theme will be today. My guests on the line are Dr. Meryl Nass. She's up in Maine. She's a board-certified internal medicine physician, but more importantly, she's an activist. And she specializes in treating patients with Gulf-4 syndrome and the adverse reactions from the anthrax vaccine and the vaccine safety and efficacy in general. In the past, she has testified on 6 separate occasions before Congress on behalf of veterans suffering from the causes of Gulf-4 syndrome. Meryl is also active in opposing vaccine mandates and critiquing the false claims and fear-mongering about infectious disease epidemics and corruption within the medical-industrial military complex. She serves on the board of the Alliance for Human Research Protection, which is a nonprofit run by my other guest, Vera Shirov, that advances medical ethics that uphold human rights and protects humans from wrongful medical interventions. Her work is cited in many professional articles and publications. She holds degrees from MIT and Mississippi School of Medicine, and her blog is anthraxvaccine.blogspot.com. And my other guest is Vera Shirov. She's in New York City. Vera is one of our most passionate street fighters against the pharmaceutical industry and an advocate for the rights of medical research subjects. She is the founding president of the Alliance for Human Research Protection. She's a Holocaust survivor. And Vera has exposed the experimental use of HIV drugs on toddlers in New York's foster care system, a major scandal. The suicide risks of antidepressant, a scandal that is not even discussed in the mainstream media, and pressured the National Institutes of Health to reevaluate its protocols on psychiatric trials to protect patients and participants. Her determination to protect the public also resulted in the Environmental Protection Agency suspending its pesticide experiments on children. Let's go back over that again. Did you know that our children were being experimented upon with these different chemicals and pesticides? She brought that to our attention, but nothing has happened because of it today. She has testified and appeared on panels with the Institute of Medicine, the Federal National Bioethics Advisory Committee, and the FDA. And she has spoken along with Professor Marcia Angell at Harvard and the former chief editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. And she was described as, quote, someone the research establishment badly needs. That was Professor Angell speaking about Vera. Vera's website with the Alliance for Human Research Protection is ahrp.org. Nice to have both of you with us today. I'm going to start by going over to you, Meryl. I'd like to begin with an issue that many who follow the reporting about COVID-19 find deeply disturbing. That is, before the Wuhan outbreak in December 31st, 2019, and the quick confirmation it was a new virulent strain of coronavirus, there is strong evidence that, and this includes the U.S. intelligence warning in late November, in an October simulation that involved a coronavirus. So this is back in 2019. This is all happening. But even earlier, in a Netflix documentary, The Next Pandemic, Bill Gates is filmed predicting a killer virus that would originate in China's wet markets and then rapidly infect the world. Then there is all the controversy whether it was a natural mutation in bats or pigs, or whether it was mass bioengineered in a laboratory. Finally, there is the Nature article, our most respected scientific publication in 2015, indicating that experiments on coronaviruses were conducted at the University of North Carolina that included, quote, gain of function, end quote. Again, gain of function. I want you to explain that in more detail. It just, in an overview, it simply means it could be engineered to be more infectious and or dangerous. Then the government put a moratorium on federal funding for, quote, gain in function, which involved genetic engineering or viruses that cause SARS, MERS, or the flu. So I would like each of you to give your overview, assessment of this information, and anything else related you could add that would give us an indication that this pandemic may have been orchestrated in some manner. And if so, by whom and for what outcome? And because you're both very familiar with the difference between your own subjective opinion and any confirming scientific fact, please stick with the facts. Meryl, the form is yours.
Hi. Okay. Whenever there is a new pandemic, obviously scientists and lay people are interested in whether something like that new pandemic had been created or had been experimented on in labs. And so there was a huge sort of crowdsourced investigation early in this pandemic and turned up a lot of papers showing that a number of countries, including the United States, had funded other countries that were collaborating in what the euphemism gain of function research on coronaviruses similar to the one we're dealing with now. Yes, that work was done at Wuhan, but it was also done at Ralph Baric's lab in North Carolina. It was done in other U.S. labs, European labs, and other labs in Asia. It's called gain of function. That is a euphemism for biological warfare research. Gain of function means making a microorganism more virulent. We don't know yet, at least in the public literature, why all these different countries were funding each other, sending scientists to each other's labs, sharing organisms, and apparently collaborating to develop these more virulent organisms. We don't know why that was done. The claim is that it was trying to see what might happen and get our defenses ready. But that's a specious claim because there are no defenses. There were no drugs, no vaccines. None of these people were drug and vaccine researchers. Ralph Baric did a little bit on, actually was involved with remdesivir, but in general, these researchers were not the kind of researchers that try to find vaccines and drugs. So for some reason, they were doing all this work in an international collaboration. What happened next? So we have the pandemic, and there are a lot of questions about it. What happened next is there were two groups of scientists from the United States and Europe, primarily, who wrote to The Lancet, and then a related group, people who work with them, wrote to Nature Medicine and insisted that it would be a conspiracy theory to even bring up the subject that this pandemic could have been caused in a lab, that, of course, the coronavirus occurred naturally, and that it would interfere with our international collaborations to try to find out how to deal with it if anybody said otherwise. That's what the Lancet paper said. The Nature Medicine paper, which came out about 3 weeks later, said, look, we have ways of designing pathogens to make them more virulent. And so if we had designed this using those techniques, it would have had a certain appearance, but it doesn't. And that means we didn't do it in the lab. Well, people immediately, including myself, within the next week or two after reading that paper said, this is utter nonsense. Clearly, just because you have a computer program that designs an organism a certain way and says it would be most pathogenic if it looked like this, that doesn't really mean that that's the only way to do it in nature. And in fact, it didn't follow the backbone that they suggested. There were other things about this particular organism that are hard to explain, but there has been research taking bits of one coronavirus and moving it into another coronavirus. So there's a furin site, which is thought to enhance the ability of the virus to get into more kinds of cells, to enter cells more easily. But it has not been seen in any beta coronaviruses, but has been seen in other coronaviruses and has been moved into from one virus to another in the lab. And then there is the binding area, this receptor binding area, which also seems to come from a different coronavirus and is known to have enhanced binding and entry to cells. In addition to that, there may be other mutations or additions at other sites that have been mentioned by Luc Montagnier, who won a Nobel Prize for discovering HIV. He thinks there are some small HIV fragments in the body of the virus, and that just hasn't been sorted out yet by virologists. But there are many funny things about this virus that gave it enhanced pathogenicity, and we know that there are these other people who really tried very hard at the beginning to prevent those issues from coming up in the public domain. So that's where we are at the moment.
Go a little further. Recently, there was a scientist, a Chinese scientist, who had worked at the Wuhan lab, and she is claiming, and she is, all of her research was, she said, wiped off all computers. They completely canceled everything about this woman and now are attacking her as official government policy to say she's a liar and she's not to be trusted. But she fled Hong Kong. From what I understand, she's now in Great Britain, but maybe somewhere else. And when she spoke with the media last week, she said that she had absolute irrefutable proof and documentation that the coronavirus 19 that we're faced with today was genetically engineered in Wuhan, and she has yet to say for what purpose. What do you make of her claims, and are you familiar with her or her claims?
Okay. I'm somewhat familiar. So this is a young woman who had come to the United States, and I don't know where she is now, made over the last month, made a lot of claims imputing the fact that China created this organism, a Chinese woman, and just imagine if an American scientist had gone over to China and started making those claims. Yes, they would have locked out everything that person had ever done, and the same thing would have happened here. You know, just as when Bruce Ivins was accused of the anthrax letters, everybody would, at Fort Detrick, was told they could not talk to the press. They had to trash the papers they were writing about their investigations into the case, et cetera. So this is not a Chinese thing. This is an international thing that when the government has a narrative it wants to push forward, it kills the other narrative in its own government employees. I personally was not impressed with this woman. She made one scientific mistake, I heard, and I wondered if she was who she said she was. She sounded like a CIA cutout, but, you know, maybe she is legitimate. I guess we'll have to wait to find out. But nobody here in the United States really jumped on those claims very much. Let me say something else. What's come out just in the last couple of weeks, maybe started before, is that Tony Fauci has said that the reason we're having pandemics, the reason we had this pandemic, and the reason we're at risk for future pandemics is because of human encroachment into the natural environment. A guy named Peter Daszak, who is the executive director of Eco Health Alliance out of New York State, gets a tremendous amount of money from federal agencies to find viruses around the world and collaborate with all these different countries' labs in the discovery, sharing, and probably bringing home many of these viruses to the Defense Department and HHS. So So he's supported by the Defense Threat Reduction Agency of DOD, USAID, which is basically State Department, National Science Foundation, and NIAID, Fauci's organization. He has been banging the drum for years that it's all humans' fault that we have these problems, and it's his job to bring pamphlets to people in their native language and explain to them that they should stop eating bats, and that bushmeat is the problem. You may recall that bushmeat, the HIV, has been blamed on the consumption of bushmeat. For some reason, there is a cabal of people who want to blame human consumption of meat in the wild for pandemics, even though it has not been demonstrated that this is where they came from. So for HIV, it's not proven. For either of the SARS pandemics, it is not proven where the organism came from. We don't know. That's why they've done so much searching in bat caves, because they don't have a progenitor for SARS-1 or for SARS-2. The West African Ebola, there was no progenitor. There was no similar bat virus found anywhere in the region within 1,000 miles. But these people, they now seem to have lined up with the World Economic Forum, and they've published articles in Science, Nature, ProPublica, NPR, New York Times, blaming the humans, mining, living in these rural areas, and farming, were the ones causing the pandemics. So it's a meme, it's a narrative, they're pushing it. They're trying to keep people frightened about this pandemic and maintain that fear to push this other narrative that people need to be taken away from these certain rural areas to protect the rest of us.
Thank you. Vera, give us your perspective on this, please.
I'm going to say sit back and start asking big questions. Why are we engaging in this kind of research? This is all destructive. This is all ammunition. The public has absolutely no say about where billions of dollars of our tax money are going for. And this is a whole huge industry. It's not just a cottage industry, as we see. It's quite international. Why have we been allowing science to go into areas that essentially can bring part of the world into dust? Now, you ask who? That's exactly what should be asked. Why are we being censored and silenced? Why are doctors who reject this narrative that Meryl described, why are they being shunted and hunted? Essentially, there are hundreds, there are probably more than 1,000 doctors who are saying no to both how the virus is being treated. Now, remember, at first in New York here, we had so many casualties, dead people that didn't need to die. In hospitals, they were not treating them correctly. They're keeping medicines that are proven to be effective and safe. They're making them... They're locking them up, essentially. Hydroxychloroquine has become Trump's drug. What does Trump have to do with a drug that has been FDA approved for 65 years and is being used by doctors for all kinds of ailments? So what I think that the citizenry really needs to start asking of their representatives is, why is this gain-of-function kind of research being funded by us? For what possible purpose? We have not ever been threatened by biological weapons from enemies.
Sweden had an enormous spike in deaths, and then it leveled off, and now it's at the bottom. They might have one death to three deaths every day or every other day. It's among the lowest in the world. And yet they did not close down their economy. They did not all have to wear masks. Theaters were open. Schools were open. Dining was out. They spaced themselves, and they did not gather in large groups. I believe that the massive amount of group was 50 people, which is not a large group. But in any case, here's what the public is not aware of. They determine the medical resources they would need with a gigantic pandemic so that their intensive care units or ICUs would not be overwhelmed and critical care would be able to be provided. They decided that younger people's lives were more important to resuscitate or save. Therefore, and I'll bet very few people in this audience have ever heard this, but this is statistically and informationally correct. They chose to simply abandon older people without bringing them in to help them. Now, would they have been able to help them? The answer is yes, because the vast majority of people who died in that spike, who died in Italian spike, in Spanish spike, in American spike, were senior citizens. In Italy, the average age for the first 3 months of people died was 80.1 years. And these were people dying in a very polluted northern part of Italy, one of the most polluted parts in the world from air pollution. But they already had end-stage emphysema, comorbidity, end-stage heart disease, comorbidity, end-stage cancer, comorbidity. In fact, some of the people who were claimed to have died of coronavirus were actually in hospice care in a cancer hospice. So they were dead. And to say that your life right now doesn't matter because you've had your life, but a 20-year-old who has coronavirus, we need that bed and that intensive care unit to save them first. And that's what they did. That was their choice. Now, is that intentional eugenics? Yes and no. It is valuing one life over another, just like a death panel. Where a doctor determines how much will it take, what will it cost to keep a person alive, even though we're not going to reverse their disease, for a certain period of time. And they said that based upon how long that person had to live, no matter what was done, but what it cost to keep them alive, it would be more effective to let that person succumb and to put their money back into saving younger lives. Of course, that's never the case. In reality, they don't go save a young life because they forewent the treatment on an older one. So that's the reality of what happened. So all those older people who would have died anyhow because they were in assisted living, they were in hospice care, they were in critical care, and they were in nursing homes, but they were being treated for their diseases, meaning if you were there because of congestive heart failure, you were given whatever the state of our treatment in Sweden was for your heart disease, cancer, for your cancer. None of those people would probably live more than 3 to 5 months. But they died in a relatively short period of time over a 2-month period because they were simply not given treatment. That's the reality. Now, then it turns out that there wasn't this mass infusion of sick people who were younger. All over the world, you didn't see younger, healthy people getting sick and dying. What you saw was that the vast majority of the public that was infected had no symptoms. And if you're asymptomatic, it's very difficult to spread a disease. Not impossible, difficult. The people who are the big spreaders are the people who are actively infected, and then they infect everything within their environment unless they're in a protected environment. So let's just keep that in perspective. Otherwise, it sounds, you step over that line, I'm sorry, Vera, where you're making an accusation based upon what the Nazis did, and I cannot in any good measure compare what the Nazis did in the horrendous and horrific experimentation of Mengele and others and the concentration camps and killing all the psychiatric patients and celebrating with champagne. I've seen that video. Over 100,000 people in mental institutions were killed for the betterment of the public. They would actually put lights underneath the person's face to give them kind of a ghoulish look, where there was no sympathy by the German public for those people who shouldn't have died. But you don't want us to suddenly sound like we're on Alex Jones. So let's just please keep, again, I said earlier, keep what we can prove, but let's not make associations that will discredit other good quality information you have. Your turn to respond to me, please.
The New York experience was exposed by ProPublica, and right now there is an investigation, in fact. And as far as in Europe, it happens that I first got wind of this through nurses who did videos and were complaining that this was happening. And this was actually in Sweden. Sweden, the public health official there said they made big mistake in the beginning, and he was referring to this. They did have a policy, evidently, which hospitals were given not to treat. I mean, this is it is another story the New York Times had about Belgium, one of the worst cases. You wonder why. But the fact is that when something like this happens, those who make these life and death decisions are not necessarily those who should be making those decisions.
I agree. You are correct, but let us please understand, I read carefully all the studies in the literature on why Sweden chose not to treat, not to resuscitate, not to even bring into hospital people who may have had a chance to live a longer life. It wasn't because of an act of eugenics, let's kill these people, like a Bill Gates or a Ted Turner or others who believe in the Margaret Sanger concept of eliminating 10 to 20% of the population. That wasn't their motive. Their motive was, if we're going to be overwhelmed and we have a life to save, do we save the younger life or do we save the older life if the older life is already in critical care and is going to die? I disagree with that policy. I'm opposed to that, but I have to separate that and not call it an extension of Nazi's eugenics program. I'm sorry, but that's my view. Anyhow, I want to go to the next issue. Here's a serious conundrum. No pharmaceutical drug or vaccine is absolutely safe. In fact, every single vaccine in history has been considered, even by the United States Supreme Court, to be inherently unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
Yet there is this farce and this fierce determination by our federal health agencies and many of in the medical establishment to prevent cheaper and effective therapies that you alluded to earlier from being used against the coronavirus. You mentioned hydroxychloroquine. Well, hydroxychloroquine now has 51 clinical studies showing absolutely at an astronomically positive rate, mm-hmm. saving a life or preventing the disease. At low dosage, there's the key, low dosage, and in combination with zinc and zithromycin. There are several different antibiotics they can use. And it became politicized by the Lancet, New England Journal of Medicine, who then tried to destroy the reputation of hydroxychloroquine. But why, if something costs $10 for an entire treatment, would you not want the public to use it if it's been around 65 years? You've been used by hundreds of millions of people. In some countries like France, it wasn't even by prescription. You could go into a pharmacy or drugstore and buy the darn stuff. 200 to 400 milligrams is the current therapy, depending upon the doctor. It might be once a day or twice a day. But they were using between 3,500 and 9,000 milligrams every day with nothing else. In stage people in critical care facilities, where it's known not to help them, actually could cause them to die. In proper studies, you didn't have those results, and yet the mainstream media has refused to acknowledge the benefit of non-patentable, these are all off-patent, inexpensive and safe drugs, therefore negating a vaccine. So in the proper context, hydroxychloroquine is the most popular one getting attention, but there are others, including more natural therapies, such as intravenous vitamin C and glutathione or an ozone. Yet hydroxychloroquine, if administered improperly, can be dangerous, but that's at very high doses. I believe that we can agree with that. But this is equally so, and even more so, for the drugs such as remdesivir that are being advocated. That's a brand new drug. So the question obviously is why, is hydroxychloroquine and these other therapies being suppressed. And as you have noted on top of that, our educational system is being completely destroyed, and we have propaganda places, not schools anymore, in my opinion. The economy's in shambles. The White House refused to provide any kind of necessary relief except for handing billions of dollars to the oligarchs. Law enforcement is being gutted, and demonstrations and riots from both the radical right and left seem to be allowed to continue. And yet, can you piece these separate ideas together to give us an understanding of who's behind it and why? Take your time, please.
You want Mira or me to go with that?
I'd like you, Meryl, to go, and then Vera right after you.
Okay. So at first it seems obvious. The first thing you think of is that remdesivir costs over $3,000 a course, and the wholesale price for hydroxychloroquine for a course, which is about 16 pills, is about a dollar. And so you think that's the reason. And it turns out that there were 16 people who were financially tied to remdesivir who were on the guidelines committee for the NIH. And the FDA, the NIH, CDC all recommend that doctors follow those guidelines. So half the people writing them had been or were currently on the remdesivir Gilead payroll. That's the company, you may remember, that our former Secretary of Defense was the CEO of. So a crooked company. The company that made billions of dollars selling Tamiflu to the government for the 2009 swine flu. When 2009 swine flu was a bust, it was less severe than an ordinary flu, and Tamiflu didn't even work, but the government stockpiled billions and helped Rumsfeld. Now, the other thing was the U.S. government put $10 billion already into a group of vaccines to be developed, which are in the process of being developed and tested for this. So they didn't want a cheap drug to get in the way of that. A lot of different companies are getting gravy from that. However, I think this is actually a lot bigger than billions for pharma. I think this is about prolonging the pandemic to make social changes. If we had given everybody hydroxychloroquine, the kids could go back to normal school. People could open their businesses normally, and the economy could start recovering. But that seems to be what the powers that be don't want. That is why they have spent, every way but Sunday they have taken to besmirch the reputation of hydroxychloroquine, even though most of the clinical trials are in favor of it. And of the clinical trials in which it's used early, 100% are in favor of the benefits. So this drug and other drugs and supplements work against coronaviruses, and this would be game over for the pandemic. But for some reason, I can't name Bill Gates, or I don't know who this is coming from and what their final plans are, but some cabal wants to maintain this pandemic until they get certain social and economic changes, and they're in the middle of that now. And it's our job to figure out what they want, what their strategies are, and to stop them.
Okay, thank you. Vera, please respond.
I agree that this is bigger than the virus as a virus, that it is being used as a weapon and as a means of essentially those changes, the social change, the human changes. Let's just think about what it's, we're living through this, what it's like to stop having normal human relations, human intercourse, friendliness, smiles. It used to be in New York, actually, people did smile at one another. People would start conversations on a bus. Now all that is verboten. We're supposed to keep distance. We're supposed to not respond in a in a normal human way to other human beings. We're supposed to be suspicious. Anyone that we pass on the street might be infected and pass this on to us. So, you know, and technology is so much more sophisticated today. It is being used for surveillance. They want to track who takes the vaccine, who doesn't. Now, tracking means also, you know, implementing, enforcing, especially they've been talking about mandating this coronavirus vaccine, which, as we all know, is being tested. What's the term that they're using in the rapid speed? Yeah. So who really, what thoughtful person would want that vaccine for themselves or for their children?
Right.
So when one hears mandates, there's a reason for mandates, because the public really doesn't want it, so you're forcing them. Forced medical interventions is just about the worst crime against your citizens. The voluntary informed consent of the human subject is absolutely essential, and we're right now in a position where that's what people have to say to our government leaders. No, we won't be forced to take a medicine or to be injected with a vaccine without our consent, and we don't consent.
Okay. Vera, a follow-up.
If enough people really got up and demonstrated and said, no, can't do it. But if they don't, then it'll be too late.
Vera, your thoughts about this hydroxychloroquine controversy, because other nations are readily prescribing hydroxychloroquine. You know that a prominent French doctor, Dr. Blase, managed to get a half million doctors and citizens to sign a petition to force the government to allow hydroxychloroquine to be a therapy. And of course, in poorer nations such as in Africa, they've been using chloroquine for decades against malaria, and it's dirt cheap, as Meryl mentioned, compared to the pharmaceutical industry's designer drugs. Can you speak about hydroxychloroquine trials that scientists have attempted
to perform? The crime, what's wrong with hydroxychloroquine is that it works. What they want, just think about it, a vaccine, they have their plan for 7 billion people. That's a big market. That's huge. That's trillions of dollars in profits. Hydroxychloroquine is a competitor they can't beat. It would just destroy that entire hope, you know, that market that they expected.
So it's all about the profits. The first company
to make
a trillion dollars.
On the medication and all that, sure. I mean, it's been all about the profit with pharmaceuticals from the get-go, from the very beginning, when medicine was pushed into this one method of medicine. I mean, you know how they've been fighting all alternatives for decades, for generations.
Sure do.
They haven't destroyed it, but they sure have made your life hard.
Vera, one more follow-up question, please. We're entering an era where less and less people are alive who actually witnessed and experienced the atrocities in the Nazi concentration camps. You were a small girl when you and your family were rounded up in Romania and sent to a camp in Ukraine. So you have a far more profound understanding of the threats of fascism and totalitarian regimes. There's now an alternative narrative being spoken about more than what we are witnessing now with the pandemic, and that is an opportunity to move the nation and likely many other nations towards a postmodern fascism. Of course, it will be completely different than past authoritarian states, but in essence, it will be an improvisational, earlier precedent-bound projection. Would you speak from your knowledge of your past and your knowledge of the fundamental characteristics of fascist states on how this pandemic or future pandemic that Gates and Fauci and the World Health Organization, the lead organizations, are warning about could be used as a means of population control and greater surveillance for maintaining stricter order while violating all human rights. And what the harshest critics of the Gates are suggesting is that he is using science as a means for the potential for eugenics. So your thoughts on this, please.
Well, this is exactly what they've done to medicine. I mean, population control has been spoken of as the necessary thing for many, many years. And this is, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation has been right from the beginning, since 1913. One of their main focus is population control. They supported the Population Council. They supported various vaccine campaigns in Africa where, you know, people died, yes. Look, one of the things, vaccines are a particular conundrum because it isn't one ingredient. It's multiple ingredients, and many of them are really not disclosed. And you can do lots of things with vaccines. You can insert things, and there was a case in Kenya where they were giving a vaccine against tetanus, and somehow only childbearing women were targeted for the vaccine. They were accused of having inserted an ingredient that would prevent pregnancy. So this has been something that has been, I hate to say played with, but it's been tinkered with and being thought of. And, you know, and there is evidence of who and what. I mean, it is those who hold the view, and as I repeat again, that some people are not as valuable as others, and there are too many of them, and they do indeed want to get rid of them.
Well, in this case, let's be specific. Bill Gates, in a TED Talk, claimed that the population was not sustainable and that there could be a 10% reduction, and he suggested vaccines. Now, the Gates Foundation funded that particular vaccine program in Kenya. It would also be in other countries. And it wasn't by accident, because every hospital and clinic in Kenya where they tested the vaccines being given for tetanus to the women showed that it had the same factor hormone that will block pregnancy. No one took responsibility for that. Nobody was held accountable. And yet that was done, a way of sterilizing a population so that that population would not be considered a threat to global overpopulating because they'd be reduced. Gates has never been questioned about that I'm aware of, by anyone in the media or any health organization. And he is one of the people. His father, of course, was the head of Planned Parenthood and knew Margaret Sanger, who was a rabid racist. And it was Margaret Sanger's work, and I've quoted, I've read all of her articles, I read all of her books. She is a rampant racist, and only now, because of public pressure, are they beginning to Planned Parenthood to remove some of the Margaret Sanger front-end promotion of honoring her to looking at her for what she really was. She was a genocidalist. I believe, my own personal belief, that one of the most dangerous people on the planet is Bill Gates. But I have to keep it specific to those who've actually gone on the record and who have claimed that they want population control versus others. But would someone in power use that power for their own means? Yes, they have and would. Now, go ahead.
There's the Kissinger report from the 1970s, which specifically stated that population control is go. It's very important. It's important for our security. It's important for, but of course, that population, the targeted population, was what he specified was in Africa.
Yeah, well, Kissinger's not one of my favorite human beings on any level, and you are correct on that.
It is terrible. I know, especially Americans. The minute you say eugenics, you shudder. Well, but the thing is, you have to shudder because this is something that has been the ideology, whether it's hidden under the radar or not, but that there are people in power who hold that ideology. There are people in academia who hold that ideology, and certainly in public health.
You are absolutely right. We have time for one more question, Meryl. Let's talk about the excellent video that James Corbett recently created. And it draw a direct connection between the events of 9/11 giving rise to a national security state, to the war against terrorism, and now the emphasis on creating biosecurity, not just for biological weapons and germ warfare, but from pandemics. And he confirms something you have been entertaining, and we all should be concerned about. The entire population are being weaponized with the potential of being bioterrorists if we carry an infectious virus or bacteria in our bodies. In a sense, we have heard this argument from the vaccine proponents, especially Arthur Kaplan at New York University, which has a right to his opinion, that the unvaccinated are a criminal threat to the vaccinated. I disagree with that. I believe it's absolute nonsensical if vaccines were truly effective. So in their faulty logic, they are acknowledging unwittingly that vaccines are ineffective. What have you uncovered regarding this strategy to blame pandemics solely on humans, and therefore we're the enemies and threats to each other? And that's why the New York Times and all media continuously attack the people who are choosing a freedom of choice to protect their body and what goes into it versus just mindlessly rolling up their arm and saying, vaccinate me. You have 3 minutes for your answer, please.
Okay. I think there are narratives that have helped to really keep everybody very frightened about coronavirus. The first is that you don't get immune after you get the infection. And the second, a corollary, is that you can get it over and over again. So therefore, even if you've had it, you still have to be afraid of everyone else. You still have to mask and socially distance. Now, these are false. The first is that if you've gotten this infection, you are in fact immune. Almost everybody is immune, and it can be measured with T cells. It can show that the T cells are responsive and will fight the infection again. There's one person documented in the United States that got an infection twice, and because it mutates frequently, that is no surprise. It's just like influenza. From 1 year to the next, right, the immunity you got from last year's influenza case, it doesn't last until the next year. So there's going to be some degree of mutation that will cause your old immunity. Not that it's not there, it works against those strains, but there may be other strains developing that you're not immune to. But by maintaining these two myths, nobody is ever really immune, and the lockdowns can never stop and the masks can never stop because we're constantly at risk. If we actually had decent tests, which have been withheld from us, and we could tell who was actually infectious, not just that you had a positive PCR test after 40 cycles and you have some minute amount of dead virus or even live virus in your body, but not enough to infect anyone else, we're not telling people that how much virus they have or whether they're actually infectious. The vast majority of people who are testing positive are not infectious. And most of them in my state don't have any symptoms. They were made cases by screening. So for example, if you've had the illness or someone in your family had the illness, chances are good you caught it. An antibody test may not pick that up, but a T-cell test probably will. you probably are safe. You can just go about your business now. And if you get it again or get a different variant, you can take hydroxychloroquine and you'll get over it very quickly. You can also tank yourself up with vitamin D, with zinc. There are a number of other supplements that are in vitro are definitely proven to be helpful for coronaviruses. And in human beings, low zinc levels and low vitamin D levels have been shown in clinical trials and observational data to be associated with more severe coronavirus disease. So if you take care of your vitamin D, your zinc, you may want to take some vitamin C, you're going to have a less severe case. And make sure you've already arranged with your doctor to get you some hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine, if appropriate, if that happens early on. If we did that, this pandemic would be over, game over, and we could go back to our normal lives.
Very good. I want to thank you, Meryl Nass and Vera Shirov, and for being on. I do have one last adjunctive question that for you, Meryl. You did the original work before anyone else in the United States concerning the anthrax vaccine and the fraud behind the FBI on that. Could you briefly discuss the government lies when there was the anthrax scare weeks after 9/11, first blaming Al-Qaeda and even Saddam Hussein before charging a microbiologist at, not surprising, the U.S. Army Infectious Disease Institute at Fort Detrick, which seems to pop up whenever experiments on pathogens, including coronavirus, arise. Do you see any correlation between the lessons learned from the 2001 anthrax outbreak and COVID-19?
Well, the lesson is that the FBI made tremendous efforts and spent probably $100 million in efforts not to find the actual perpetrator. And they went after one patsy after another. They had about six or eight different patsies until they had a body. And when someone finally, after a couple of years of harassment, committed suicide, and possibly with their help, it took them after that a year and a half to actually close the case and create a whole bunch of circumstantial evidence, some of which they created, some of which was already there, to make it appear that that person might have committed the crime. But when you look closely at their evidence, it completely falls apart. And lawyers for 9/11 Truth are about to file suit asking for a grand jury and for the case to be reopened, because it's so obvious to anyone who looks that the FDA case is made of whole cloth. In this case, again, we've had a cover-up. We don't know exactly the nature of the cover-up yet, but we've had a group of scientists who are either affiliated with the biodefense establishment or have been top doctors and scientists in government. For example, the head of the NIH, the former head of the National Science Foundation, the assistant attorney general, who have all said that it's a conspiracy theory if you talk about the fact that this particular coronavirus may have been made in a lab. So there's a cover-up started to try to insist that this was a natural occurrence and that it was due to humans, and we are to blame, not all these guys in the lab and not the governments that fund them. We didn't solve the crime. You know, we allowed the FBI to get away with their concocted story of the case, and we didn't put into place a good way to resolve crimes like this, and now we have another one, and now it's bigger and affecting the whole world. And if we let this one go, I mean, if we're supine under these conditions when our whole society is being destroyed, you know, I don't have any hopes for the human race.
Thank you very much, Meryl Nass, for that. And Vera Shirov, thank you both very much. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening and have a nice day.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying.